locking up the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. Let's look ahead to week two. Nevada's coming to town off one of the wildest wins you'll see. Our next guest does his thing for Nevada Sports Net online, nevadasportsnet.com. Follow along on Twitter. The handle is at MurrayNSN. Welcome in, Chris Murray. Chris, thanks for the time. How's life treating you these days?
Pretty good. How are you guys doing?
All right. So as a first-time guest, a little background, what's kind of your personal story? Where do you hail from? You know, what's your resume look like? And how long have you been writing and covering Wolfpack sports for NSN?
So, yeah, I was born in Los Angeles, or the Los Angeles area. I moved to Northern Nevada when I was 6 years old. I guess my family made that decision. But I've been in Northern Nevada for the past 30 years, and I've covered the Wolfpack for the last 19. So 17 of those were at the Reno Gazette Journal newspaper, and then we did a little startup, started a sports-only channel here with Nevada Sportsnet and a website to go along with it. So I've been covering the Wolfpack for a long time, and their win over Purdue was, you know, one of the more thrilling victories they've had in the last several seasons.
Yeah, you know, I wanted to start last week versus Purdue. I mean, Purdue's up 14 midway through the fourth, still up 7 with under a minute left. Carson Strong hits Elijah Cooks for the tie. I know, obviously, a lot of people here are wired into the Pac-12 and the Oregon game. So it's Purdue ball, their own 29, 50 seconds to go. So for those who didn't see it, how in the heck did the Wolfpack end up winning that game in regulation?
Yeah, I mean, turnovers. I mean, Elijah Sindelar threw an interception right around midfield. Nevada was actually penalized for excessive celebration, so they got pushed back about 15 yards. So Carson Strong probably had about 35 seconds to move the ball, 30, 35 yards, to give them a chance at a game-winning field goal, and he was able to do that. And Brandon Talton, who wasn't even thought to be the starter entering the game at kicker, made a 56-yarder, the third longest in program history as time expired, to give Nevada the win. But the biggest thing in that game was just the turnovers. I mean, Nevada was plus 5 in the turnover margin. They created 5 turnovers, and the redshirt freshman making his first career start at quarterback, Carson Strong, didn't turn the ball over at all. So, you know, the Wolfpack was outgained. They were out first down. They were, you know, down for basically the entire game, but those turnovers were huge. 4 of them were in the second half. Purdue kind of fell apart at the end of the game. I do think that the elevation in Reno, about 4,800 feet, really got to Purdue toward the end of the game. And the Wolfpack made some huge plays down the stretch. I mean, they scored the game's final 20 points, including 10 in the final 55 seconds. So, you know, they carried some momentum, some confidence about them heading into this game at Oregon, which will obviously be very difficult. And that is 0-17 all-time on the road against AP top 25 teams. So it'd be a historic win for the Wolfpack on a variety of fronts.
So that true freshman, Brandon Talton, I mean, is he going to ever have to buy beer, food, pay to see his show at the Sands? Well, what kind of a week is it for a young guy like that? Because that's just a wow.
Yeah, I mean, it was just an amazing situation. I mean, Jay Norvell had not decided when he went to sleep on Thursday night who his starting kicker was going to be. Nevada has a senior kicker, Spencer Pettit, who, you know, entering the year had made 15 to 20 field goals. He's a very reliable kicker, but this true freshman walk-on was just impressive enough during fall camp and had a much stronger leg than Spencer Pettit that Norvell opted to roll the dice and go with him, and he was outstanding. I mean, everybody notices the 56-yard field goal, but just to tie the game, the extra point was also pushed back because of an excessive celebration on Elijah Cooks after the game tying touchdown. So it ended up being a 35-yard extra point to tie the game, which is a bunch of pressure there, and he made that. Earlier in the game, he had actually taken the field to attempt a 34-yard field goal, and the holder wasn't out there. So he had to alert the sideline that, hey, I don't got a holder out here. The holder runs out there, doesn't even have his chin strap buckled. He's 9 yards deep rather than your typical 7 yards deep. They get the snap off with 1 second, and Talton hits that one right through the middle. So, you know, just icy veins for Brandon Talton. And like you said, he's probably never going to have to buy another beer here. It might not be the most famous field goal in school history. Nevada beat number 3 Boise State in 2010. On a kick in overtime by a local kid, a local hero from the high school ranks. You know, to wrap up that game, but he's certainly in the top 3 most famous field goals in Wolfpack history and was immediately put on scholarship after the game. So a really cool moment for him. you know, after the press conference was wrapped up, I was walking out to my car, and Brandon was there with his mom and his dad and his sister and his grandma, and I spoke with them for a little bit. He was actually on his phone, and he had seen that his kick had been the number three play in SportsCenter's top 10 moment. So pretty crazy going into the day, not even knowing if you're going to be the team starting kicker, and to leave it as a hero with a top play nationally and on scholarship. So a really amazing moment for him. And, you know, it's a super strong leg. I mean, he gives them another weapon in special teams entering the rest of the season, because that 56-yarder probably would have been good from 62, 63. I mean, he put a pretty good charge into it.
Oh, no, he buried it. That's the thing that got me. Talking Nevada football, Chris Murray of Nevada Sports Net. You know, for a lot of people don't realize that the program's only been Division I for just a little over a quarter century. Most of us familiar with Chris Ault. Then the program started to slip a bit, but this guy, Jay Norville, has a great resume. I mean, he was actually a tight end coach for the last Raiders Super Bowl team, and he went from 3 wins to 8 last year. What could you tell us, being inside there, you know, the kind of coach he is and the impact he's already made?
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned the resume. I mean, it's very impressive. You're talking about a guy who was an offensive coordinator at Oklahoma under Bob Stoops for a decade, a guy who's been offensive coordinator at Nebraska, at UCLA. You mentioned his time with the Raiders. He also was a wide receivers coach with the Colts. He's coached at the NFL level guys like Jerry Rice, Tim Brown, Reggie Wayne, Marvin Harrison. You know, he had to put in 30 years as an assistant coach before somebody would finally give him a job. I mean, he was a finalist for a number of positions. He started to believe that maybe he was just a minority interview and was never really going to get that chance. And, you know, Nevada gave him that opportunity. And I don't think he was the favorite going into the process, but really won over Doug Knuth, the athletic director here. And he inherited a situation that was down. I mean, Chris Ault, you mentioned, he has kind of been the founding father of this football program, 28 years as the team's head coach over three different stints. He's in the College Football Hall of Fame. He had always been super successful, but whenever Nevada did not have him as head coach, it had always been a program that had struggled, that was not making bowls, and he inherited a program that was coming off a down season. And, yeah, it took a rebuild, but he put in very different offensive and defensive schemes. I mean, he brought in an air raid, which is different from what Nevada was running, which was more the pistol offense. And then he brought in on defense a 3-3-5 stack, which was very different than the cover two. So he had to recruit players to that scheme and to that system. That's why you had the first year rebuild, and then last year to get up to 8 wins, the most that they have had since 2010, when they went 13-1 with Colin Kaepernick, win the 6th bowl game in school history. So I think now he has the players in place that he wants. It's a good mix of veterans and a good mix of young players. And he's done a really good job of upgrading the recruiting, and that's why they were better last season. So, yeah, he's done a tremendous job. He's a very, very, very smart guy. I mean, a guy who has a brilliant offensive mind. And he's brought in Matt Mummy, the son of Hal Mummy, to run his offense, run that air raid. And then Jeff Castile was the defensive coordinator with those really, really good West Virginia teams, with Rich Rodriguez, also had a stint as Arizona's defensive coordinator. So a very veteran group of guys around him on the staff. But a guy who, yeah, clearly has shown that he shouldn't have had to wait 30 years to become a head coach, because he's done a really good job with Nevada in his two-plus years.
You know, the young guy who made the kick, Tolton, obviously a true freshman, and that got so much attention. You mentioned it briefly, but a lot of folks might not realize the quarterback, Carson Strong, also a true freshman. What could you tell us about the decision to name him starter, his debut, and kind of the skill set he brings to the position?
Yeah, I mean, a really big kid. I mean, he's 6'4", 220 pounds. He was an excellent basketball player that actually – family thought his future in college might be in basketball. So, you know, he was a guy who was athletic enough to make some plays outside of the pocket. I wouldn't say he's like a plus-plus athlete, but he did make some, you know, some big first downs with his legs against Purdue. Nevada was his only scholarship offer. He was a guy who was really under the radar. He tried out for a 7-on-7 team in the Bay Area. He's from the Bay Area. Maurice Jones-Drew, the former NFL running back, was the coach of that team and, you know, ended up picking Carson to lead a 7-on-7 team. And that kind of gave him the confidence that he could be a next-level player. He's still, at that point, late in his junior year, had not been given a Division I scholarship offer. Nevada comes in and gives him the offer. He unfortunately had to have knee surgery, missed all of his senior season at the high school level, but that did allow him to enroll early at Nevada. So while he's a redshirt freshman, he's gone through two spring camps, two fall camps. Nevada had an open competition heading into this season. He was probably third on the depth chart from the fans' perspective. They had a fifth-year senior, Christian Solano, who was kind of projected to win the starting job. He broke his hand the second practice of fall camp by hitting his hand on a helmet. And then Malik Henry of Last Chance U fame, a four-star kid who began his career at Florida State, you know, kind of drew a lot of the headlines after Solano injured himself. But Strong, he'd kind of been, I think, the guy all along in Jay Norvell's eyes, and he just wanted to see him check all the boxes. And he got off to a really slow start against Purdue, but really outstanding performance by the end. I mean, a guy who threw for 295 yards, three touchdowns, zero interceptions, probably the most impressive thing. I was actually going back and looking at all of Nevada's first-time starters since 2000. That's 15 different quarterbacks. Only three of them in their debut did not throw an interception. So I think as good as he was late in the game, especially on third and fourth down, you know, making big plays, it was the lack of making big mistakes. It's not that he just didn't throw any interceptions. I mean, he had 51 passes, and really none of the balls were even in the range of being intercepted. So he's going to, you know, be put in a very different atmosphere going up to a place that's going to be packed, a road crowd. But you couldn't really draw up his debut any better. I mean, a kid who has an NFL-level arm for sure, and it seems to be more poised than you would expect from your average redshirt freshman.
Couple final thoughts for Chris Murray of Nevada Sportsnet. Obviously, a lot hinges on the offensive line. I know Jake Nelson is the senior anchor at left tackle. Nate Brown on the other side, a second-year starter. The rest don't really have a lot of starts under their belts, though they've played. What could you tell us about the group known as the Union, the group that Angus McClure has put together?
Yeah, so Angus was an assistant at UCLA for around 15 years and actually took a pay cut to come back to Nevada where his career kind of started. And it's a young group, like you said. I mean, they did allow only one sack and 51 pass attempts against Purdue, but they didn't get much push in the run game. And Purdue did not blitz very often, which I was surprised. I mean, you would think retro freshman quarterback making his first start and a young offensive line, you'd see a little bit more pressure, a little bit more exotic blitzes, and we did not see that. That is, to me, still the offensive line, kind of the question mark, maybe the weakness of the offense. Nevada has a really good running back in Toa Taua. He was the Mountain West freshman of the year last year. They have really good wide receivers, one of them being Washington State transfer Caleb Fossum, who played at Autzen Stadium as a freshman with Washington State. It was a double overtime win that the Cougars had there. Some really talented wide receiver, Elijah Cooks, Romeo Dubs. These are, you know, certainly power five athletes, and they're both 6'3" or taller. But the question mark is that offensive line. If Nevada is not able to get its run game going like it did against Purdue, I do question how effective the offense will be in this game. Jake Nelson, like you mentioned, a really good left tackle, is the only player who started every game in the Jay Norvell era. The interior of the line was the bigger question. I mean, you have three first-time starters at center and the two guard positions. So there's a potential to potentially get some pressure up the middle. The starting center, the local kid who was a walk-on, who earned the starting job. So, yeah, that is, for me, the question mark. Is can Nevada's offensive line do enough to give Carson Strong and his weapons an opportunity to do some damage against what I think is a really good Oregon defense?
And lastly, I always like to get the view from the other side. You know, we know the Ducks got off to a rough start. That was a gut punch loss to Auburn. Now they're back home. What's the word that you've observed, the guys you've talked to, about the kind of atmosphere the Wolfpack will be walking into and some of the challenges this Oregon team will present?
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be a different atmosphere. I mean, Nevada did play at Washington State 2 years ago, so maybe somewhat similar. But last year, their biggest non-conference road game was Vanderbilt, which does not draw a huge crowd, especially for an SEC team. So it's going to be a different thing for a lot of the players on this team because it's a very young group. I mentioned Caleb Fossum earlier playing at Austin Stadium, and he's tried to get his guys prepared for this game, prepared for this atmosphere. They've had a golf cart with a bunch of speakers attached to it, kind of driving around practice right behind huddles to try and blare in music. But I don't think you can necessarily assimilate that kind of situation. So it's going to be a challenge early. I think Nevada needs to get off to a good start in this game. Last time the Wolfpack played at Oregon, it was actually a very similar situation. It was 2011 Oregon open season neutral site in Texas against an SEC team. They lost that game to LSU, and then they came home to play Nevada in week two, and they blitzed the Wolfpack. I mean, it was 69 to 20 by the end of the game, but they scored like 35 points right out of the gate. Nevada needs to do a better job of getting ready for that atmosphere and at least making it a game at halftime, putting some pressure on Oregon, because I could see Oregon really coming out early and giving it to Nevada. So, you know, everyone says that they're ready. They're not going to look at the jersey on the other side. They're playing a nameless, faceless opponent. But it is different when you go into a place that's going to have 56,000 people rooting against you. So it'll be curious to see how a very young Wolfpack team kind of handles that. But they should be a lot more confident coming off the win against Purdue. I mean, this is a team that I think really believes in itself. But until you go out and you beat a quality team, there might be some doubt in the back of your mind. I mean, Purdue is maybe not the greatest team in the world, but you're talking about a team that's gone to back-to-back bowl games, yep. A team that beat three top 25 schools last year, including number two Ohio State in the romp. So I do think that they have a little bit more belief and reason to believe going into this Oregon game than they would have had they not been able to make that comeback against the Willard Bakers.
Folks, he's Chris Murray doing terrific work for Nevada Sports Net on Twitter. Follow along. The handle is at MurrayNSN. Chris, great stuff. You travel safe. We really appreciate you finding some time to join us on our show. Thanks a lot.
Yeah, thanks for having me.